to learn. She wanted to fight with spears. If that was so, however, she was growing impatient. The newer figures forming up were increasingly distorted, more bestial, spiny teeth spilling from their mouths.
"Your imitation is pathetic," Shallan whispered. "Here, let me show you how it's done."
Shallan drew in her stormlight, going alight like a beacon. Things screamed, pulling away from her. As she stepped around the formation of worried bridgemen, wading into the blackness at their left flank, figures extended from her, shapes growing from light. The people from her recently rebuilt collection. Palona. Soldiers from the hallways. A group of soulcasters she'd passed 2 days ago. Men and women from the markets. High princes and scribes. The man who had tried to pick up Vale at the tavern. The horn eater she'd stabbed in the hand. Soldiers. Cobblers. Scouts. Washwomen. Even a few kings. A glowing, radiant force. Her figures spread out to surround the beleaguered bridgemen like sentries. This new glowing force drove the enemy monsters back, and the tar withdrew along the sides of the hall until the path of retreat was open. The Midnight Mother dominated the darkness at the end of the hall, the direction they had not yet explored. It waited there, and did not recede farther. The bridgemen relaxed, Renarin muttering as he healed the last few who had been hurt. Shallan's cohort of glowing figures moved forward and formed a line with her, between darkness and bridgemen. The creatures formed again from the blackness ahead, growing more ferocious, like beasts. Featureless blobs with teeth sprouting from slit mouths.
"How are you doing this?" Adolin asked, voice ringing from within his helm. "Why are they afraid?"
"Has someone with a knife, not knowing who you were, ever tried to threaten you?"
"Yeah. I just summoned my shard blade."
"It's a little like that."
Shallan stepped forward, and Adolin joined her. Renarin summoned his blade and took a few quick steps to reach them, his plate clicking. The darkness pulled back, revealing that the hallway opened up into a room ahead. As she approached, Shallan's stormlight illuminated a bowl-like chamber. The center was dominated by a heaving black mass that undulated and pulsed, stretching from floor to ceiling some 20 feet above. The midnight beasts tested forward against her light, no longer seeming as intimidated.
"We have to choose," Shallan said to Adolin and Renarin. "Retreat or attack?"
"What do you think?"
"I don't know. This creature, she's been watching me. She's changed how I see the tower. I feel like I understand her. A connection I cannot explain. That can't be a good thing, right? Can we even trust what I think?"
Adolin raised his faceplate and smiled at her.
"Storms. That smile."
"High Marshal Halad always said that to beat someone you must first know them. It's become one of the rules we follow in warfare."
"And what did he say about retreat?"
"Plan every battle as if you will inevitably retreat, but fight every battle like there is no backing down."
The main mass in the chamber undulated, faces appearing from its tarry surface, pressing out as if trying to escape. There was something beneath the enormous spren. Yes, it was wrapped around a pillar that reached from the floor of the circular room to its ceiling. The murals, the intricate art, the fallen troves of information. This place was important. Shallan clasped her hands before herself, and the pattern blade formed in her palms. She twisted it in a sweaty grip, falling into the dueling stance Adolin had been teaching her. Holding it immediately brought pain. Not the screaming of a dead spren. Pain inside. The pain of an ideal sworn but not yet overcome.
"Bridgeman!" Adolin called. "You willing to give it another go?"
"We'll last longer than you will, Gancho. Even with your fancy armor."
Adolin grinned and slammed his faceplate down.
"At your word, Radiant."
She sent her illusions in, but the darkness didn't shy before them as it had previously. Black figures attacked her illusions. testing to find that they weren't real. Dozens of these midnight men clogged their way forward.
"Clear the way for me to the thing in the center," she said, trying to sound more certain than she felt. "I need to get close enough to touch her."
"Renarin can guard my back?" Adolin asked.
Renarin nodded. Adolin took a deep breath, then charged into the room, bursting right through the middle of an illusion of his father. He struck at the first midnight man, chopping it down, then began sweeping around him in a frenzy. Bridge Four shouted, rushing in behind him. Together they began to form a path for Shallan, slaying the creatures between her and the pillar. She walked through the bridgemen, a rank of them forming a spear line to either side of her. Ahead, Adolin pushed toward the pillar, Renarin at his back preventing him from being surrounded, bridgemen in turn pushing up along the sides to keep Renarin from being overwhelmed. The monsters no longer bore even a semblance of humanity. They struck Adolin, two real claws and teeth scraping his armor. Others clung to him, trying to weigh him down or find chinks in the shard plate.
"They know how to face men like him," Shallan thought, still holding her shard blade in one hand. "Why then do they fear me?"
Shallan wove light, and a version of Radiant appeared near Renarin. The creatures attacked it, leaving Renarin for a moment. Unfortunately, most of her illusions had fallen, collapsing into stormlight as they were disrupted again and again. She could have kept them going, she thought, with more practice. Instead, she wove versions of herself. Young and old, confident and frightened, a dozen different Shallans. With a shock, she realized that several were pictures she'd lost, self-portraits she'd practiced with a mirror, as Dandos the Oilsworn had insisted was vital for an aspiring artist. Some of herself cowered, others fought. For a moment Shallan lost herself, and she even let Vale appear among them. She was those women, those girls, every one of them, and none of them were her. They were things she used, manipulated, illusions.
"Shallan!"
Adolin shouted, voice straining as Renarin grunted and ripped midnight men off him.
"Whatever you're going to do, do it now!"
She'd stepped up to the front of the column the soldiers had won for her, right near Adolin. She tore her gaze away from a child Shallan dancing among the midnight men. Before her, the main mass, coating the pillar in the center of the room, bubbled with faces that stretched against the surface, mouths opening to scream, then submerged like men drowning in tar.
"Shallan!"
Adolin said again. That pulsing mass, so terrible, but so captivating. The image of the pit, the twisting lines of the corridors, the tower that couldn't be completely seen. This was why she'd come. Shallan strode forward, arm out, and let the illusory sleeve covering her hand vanish. She pulled off her glove, stepped right up to the mass of tar and voiceless screams, then pressed her safe hand against it.
30. Mother of Lies. Listen to the words of a fool. From Oathbringer, Preface. Shallan was open to this thing, laid bare, her skin split, her soul gaping wide. It could get in. It was also open to her. She felt its confused fascination with humankind. It remembered men, an innate understanding, much as newborn mink kits innately knew to fear the sky eel. This Spren was not completely aware, not completely cognizant. She was a creation of instinct and alien curiosity, drawn to violence and pain like scavengers to the scent of blood. Shallan knew Rey Shafir at the same time as the thing came to know her. The Spren tugged and prodded at Shallan's bond with Pattern, seeking to rip it free and insert herself instead. Pattern clung to Shallan and she to him, holding on for dear life.
"She fears us," Pattern's voice buzzed in her head. "Why does she fear us?"
In her mind's eye, Shallan envisioned herself holding tightly to Pattern in his humanoid form, the two of them huddled down before the Spren's attack. That image was all she could see at the moment, for the room and everything in it had dissolved to black. This thing was ancient, created long ago as a splinter of the soul of something even more terrible. Ray Shafir had been ordered to sow chaos, spawning horrors to confuse and destroy men. Over time, slowly, she'd become increasingly intrigued by the things she murdered. Her creations had come to imitate what she saw in the world, but lacking love or affection, like stones come alive, content to be killed or to kill with no attachment or enjoyment, no emotions beyond an overpowering curiosity, and that ephemeral attraction to violence. Almighty above, it's like a creation, Spren, only so, so wrong. Pattern whimpered, huddled against Shallan in his shape of a man with a stiff robe and a moving pattern for a head. She tried to shield him from the onslaught. Fight every battle, as if there is no backing down. Shallan looked into the depths of the swirling void, the dark spinning soul of Ray Shafir, the Midnight Mother. Then, growling, Shallan struck. She didn't attack like the prim, excitable girl who had been trained by cautious Voran society. She attacked like the frenzied child who had murdered her mother, the cornered woman who had stabbed Tin through the chest. She drew upon the part of her that hated the way everyone assumed she was so nice, so sweet, the part of her that hated being described as diverting or clever. She drew upon the stormlight within and pushed herself farther into Ray Shafir's essence. She couldn't tell if it was actually happening, if she was pushing her physical body farther into the creature's tar, or if this was all a representation of someplace else, a place beyond this room in the tower, beyond even Shadesmar. The creature trembled, and Shallan finally saw the reason for its fear. It had been trapped. The event had happened recently in the Spren's Reckoning, though Shallan had the impression that in fact centuries upon centuries had passed. Ray Shafir was terrified of it happening again. The imprisonment had been unexpected, presumed impossible, and it had been done by a lightweaver like Shallan, who had understood this creature. It feared her like an axe hound might fear someone with a voice similar to that of its harsh master. Shallan hung on, pressing herself against the enemy, but realization washed over her. The understanding that this thing was going to know her completely, discover each and every one of her secrets. Her ferocity and determination wavered. Her commitment began to seep away. So she lied. She insisted that she wasn't afraid. She was committed. She'd always been that way. She would continue that way forever. Power could be an illusion of perception, even within yourself. Ray Shafir broke. It screeched, a sound that vibrated through Shallan. A screech that remembered its imprisonment and feared something worse. Shallan dropped backward in the room where they'd been fighting. Adolin caught her in a steel grip, going down on one knee with an audible crack of plate against stone. She heard that echoing scream fading, not dying. Fleeing, escaping, determined to get as far from Shallan as it could. When she forced her eyes open, she found the room clean of the darkness. The corpses of the midnight creatures had dissolved. Renarin quickly knelt next to a bridgeman who had been hurt, removing his gauntlet and infusing the man with healing stormlight. Adolin helped Shallan sit up, and she tucked her exposed safe hand under her other arm. Storms! She'd somehow kept up the illusion of the Hava. Even after all of that, she didn't want Adolin to know of Vale. She couldn't.
Where?
She asked him, exhausted. Where did it go? Adolin pointed toward the other side of the room where a tunnel extended farther down into the depths of the mountain.
It fled in that direction like moving smoke.
So, should we chase it down?
Eth asked, making his way carefully toward the tunnel. His lantern revealed steps cut into the stone.
This goes down a long ways.
Shallan could feel a change in the air. The tower was different. Don't give chase, she said, remembering the terror of that conflict. She was more than happy to let the thing run. We can post guards in this chamber, but I don't think she'll return.
Yeah,
Teft said, leaning on his spear and wiping sweat from his face.
Guards seem like a very, very good idea.
Shallan frowned at the tone of his voice, then followed his gaze to look at the thing Ray Shafir had been hiding. The pillar, in the exact center of the room. It was set with thousands upon thousands of cut gemstones, most larger than Shallan's fist. Together, they were a treasure worth more than most kingdoms.
31. Demands of the Storm. If they cannot make you less foolish, at least let them give you hope. From Oathbringer, Preface. Throughout his youth, Kaladin had dreamed of joining the military and leaving quiet little Hearthstone. Everyone knew that soldiers traveled extensively and saw the world. And he had. He'd seen dozens upon dozens of empty hills, weed-covered plains, and identical war camps. Actual sights, though? Well, that was another story. The city of Revelar was, as his hike with the Parshmen had proven, only a few weeks away from Hearthstone by foot. He'd never visited. Storms he'd never actually lived in a city before, unless you counted the war camps. He suspected most cities weren't surrounded by an army of Parshmen as this one was. Revelar was built in a nice hollow on the leeward side of a series of hills, the perfect spot for a little town. Except this was not a little town. The city had sprawled out, filling in the areas between the hills, going up the leeward slopes, only leaving the tips completely bare. He'd expected a city to look more organized. He'd imagined neat rows of houses, like an efficient war camp. This looked more like a snarl of plants clumped in a chasm at the shattered plains. Streets running this way and that, markets that poked out haphazardly. Kaladin joined his team of Parshmen as they wound along a wide roadway kept level with smoothed creme. They passed through thousands upon thousands of Parshmen camped here, and more gathered by the hour, it seemed. His, however, was the only group that carried stone-headed spears on their shoulders, packs of dried grain biscuits, and hogshide leather sandals. They tied their smocks with belts and carried stone knives, hatchets, and tinder in waxed sleeves made from candles he'd traded for. He'd even begun teaching them to use a sling. He probably shouldn't have shown them any of these things. That didn't stop him from feeling proud as he walked with them, entering the city. Crowds thronged the streets. Where had all these Parshmen come from? This was a force of at least 40 or 50,000. He knew most people ignored Parshmen, and, well, he'd done the same. But he'd always had tucked in the back of his mind this idea that there weren't that many out there. Each high-ranking Light Eyes owned a handful, and a lot of the caravaneers, and, well, even the less wealthy families from cities or towns had them. And there were the dock workers, the miners, the water haulers, the packmen they used when building large projects.
"It's amazing," Saw said
from where he walked beside Kaladin, carrying his daughter on his shoulders to give her a better view. She clutched some of his wooden cards, holding them close like another child might carry a favorite stuffed doll. "Amazing?" Kaladin asked Saw.
"Our own city, Cal," he whispered. "During my time as a slave, barely able to think, I still dreamed. I tried to imagine what it would be like to have my own home, my own life. Here it is,
The parchment had obviously moved into homes along the streets here. Were they running markets, too? It raised a difficult, unsettling question. Where were all the humans? Ken's group walked deeper into the city, still led by the unseen Spren. Kaladin spotted signs of trouble. Broken windows, doors that no longer latched. Some of that would be from the Everstorm, but he passed a couple of doors that had obviously been hacked open with axes. Looting. And ahead stood an inner wall. It was a nice fortification, right in the middle of the city sprawl. It probably marked the original city boundary, as decided upon by some optimistic architect. Here, at long last, Kaladin found signs of the fight he'd expected during his initial trip to Alethkar. The gates to the inner city lay broken. The guardhouse had been burned, and arrowheads still stuck from some of the wood beams they passed. This was a conquered city. But where had the humans been moved? Should he be looking for a prison camp? Or a heaping pyre of burned bones? Considering the idea made him sick. "Is this what it's about?" Kaladin said as they walked down a roadway in the inner city. "Is this what you want, sir? To conquer the kingdom? Destroy humankind?" "Storms, I don't know," he said. "But I can't be a slave again, Cal. I won't let them take Vi and imprison her. Would you defend them, after what they did to you?" "They're my people." "That's no excuse. If one of your people murders another, don't you put them in prison? What is a just punishment for enslaving my entire race?"
Syl soared past, her face peeking from a shimmering haze of mist. She caught his eye, then zipped over to a windowsill and settled down, taking the shape of a small rock.
Kaladin said. "I don't know, sir. But a war to exterminate one side or the other can't be the answer." "You can fight alongside us, Cal. It doesn't have to be about humans against Parshmen. It can be nobler than that. Oppressed against the oppressors."
As they passed the place where Syl was, Kaladin swept his hand along the wall. Syl, as they'd practiced, zipped up the sleeve of his coat. He could feel her, like a gust of wind, move up his sleeve, then out his collar, into his hair. The long curls hid her, they'd determined, well enough.
"There are a lot of those yellow-white Spren here, Kaladin," she whispered, "zipping through the air, dancing through buildings."
"Any signs of humans?" Kaladin whispered.
"To the east," she said, "crammed into some army barracks and old parchment quarters. Others are in big pens, watched under guard. Kaladin, there's another high storm coming today."
"When?"
"Soon, maybe. I'm new to guessing this. I doubt anyone is expecting it. Everything has been thrown off. The charts will all be wrong until people can make new ones."
Kaladin hissed slowly through his teeth. Ahead, his team approached a large group of parchmen. Judging by the way they'd been organized into large lines, this was some kind of processing station for new arrivals. Indeed, Hen's band of 100 was shuffled into one of the lines to wait. Ahead of them, a parchman in full carapace armor, like a Parshendi, strolled down the line holding a writing board. Syl pulled farther into Kaladin's hair as the Parshendi man stepped up to Hen's group.
"What towns, work camps, or armies do you all come from?"
His voice had a strange cadence, similar to the Parshendi Kaladin had heard on the Shattered Plains. Some of those in Hen's group had hints of it, but nothing this strong. The scribe Parshman wrote down the list of towns Hen gave him, then noted their spears.
"You've been busy. I'll recommend you for special training. Send your captive to the pens. I'll write down a description here, and once you're settled, you can put him to work."
"He," Ken said, looking at Kaladin. "He is not our captive."
She seemed begrudging.
"He was one of the humans' slaves, like us. He wishes to join and fight."
The parchman looked up in the air at nothing.
"Yixli is speaking for you," Saw whispered to Kaladin.
she sounds impressed.
Well, the scribe said, it's not unheard of, but you'll have to get permission from one of the fused to label him free.
One of the what? Hen asked. The parchman with the writing board pointed toward his left.
Kaladin had to step out of the line, along with several of the others, to see a tall parchwoman with long hair. There was carapace covering her cheeks, running back along the cheekbones and into her hair. The skin on her arms prickled with ridges, as if there were carapace under the skin as well. Her eyes glowed red. Kaladin's breath caught. Bridge 4 had described these creatures to him, the strange Parshendi they'd fought during their push toward the center of the shattered plains. These were the beings who had summoned the Everstorm. This one focused directly on Kaladin. There was something oppressive about her red gaze. Kaladin heard a clap of thunder in the far distance. Around him, many of the parchmen turned toward it and began to mutter. High storm. In that moment, Kaladin made his decision. He'd stayed with Sa and the others as long as he dared. He'd learned what he could. The storm presented a chance.
It's time to go.
The tall, dangerous creature with the red eyes, the Fused, they had called her, began walking toward Hen's group. Kaladin couldn't know if she recognized him as a Radiant, but he had no intention of waiting until she arrived. He'd been planning. The old slave's instincts had already decided upon the easiest way out. It was on Hen's belt. Kaladin sucked in the stormlight right from her pouch. He burst a light with its power, then grabbed the pouch. He needed those gemstones and yanked it free, the leather strap snapping.
"Get your people to shelter," Kaladin said to the surprised Hen. "A high storm is close. Thank you for your kindness. No matter what you are told, know this. I do not wish to be your enemy."
The Fused began to scream with an angry voice. Kaladin met Sa's betrayed expression, then launched himself into the air.
Freedom.
Kaladin's skin shivered with joy. Storms, how he'd missed this. The wind, the openness above, even the lurch in his stomach as gravity let go. Syl spun around him as a ribbon of light, creating a spiral of glowing lines. Glory spren burst upon Kaladin's head. Syl took on the form of a person just so she could glower at the little bobbing balls of light.
"Mine,"
she said, swatting one of them aside. About 500 or 600 feet up, Kaladin changed to a half-lashing, so he slowed and hovered in the sky. Beneath, that red-eyed parchwoman was gesturing and screaming, though Kaladin couldn't hear her. Storms. He hoped this wouldn't mean trouble for Sa and the others. He had an excellent view of the city, the streets filled with figures now making for shelter in buildings. Other groups rushed to the city from all directions. Even after spending so much time with them, his first reaction was one of discomfort. So many parchmen together in one place? It was unnatural. This impression bothered him now as it never would have before. He eyed the storm wall, which he could see approaching in the far distance. He still had time before it arrived. He'd have to fly up above the storm to avoid being caught in its winds. But then what?
"Urethiru is out there somewhere to the west," Kaladin said. "Can you guide us there?"
"How would I do that?"
"You've been there before."
"So have you."
"You're a force of nature, Syl," Kaladin said. "You can feel the storms. Don't you have some kind of location sense?"
"You're the one from this realm," she said, batting away another glory spren and hanging in the air beside him, folding her arms. "Besides, I'm less a force of nature and more one of the raw powers of creation transformed by collective human imagination into a personification of one of their ideals."
She grinned at him.
"Where did you come up with that?"
"Dunno. Maybe I heard it somewhere once. Or maybe I'm just smart."
"We'll have to make for the Shattered Plains, then," Kaladin said. "We can strike out for one of the larger cities in southern Alethkar, swap gemstones there, and hopefully have enough to hop over to the war camps."
That decided, he tied his gemstone pouch to his belt, then glanced down and tried to make a final estimate of troop numbers and parchment fortifications. It felt odd to not worry about the storm, but he'd just move up over it once it arrived. From up here, Kaladin could see the great trenches cut into the stones to divert away floodwaters after a storm. Though most of the Parshmen had fled for shelter, some remained below, craning necks and staring up at him. He read betrayal in their postures, though he couldn't even tell if these were members of Hen's group or not.
"What?" Syl asked, alighting on his shoulder.
"I can't help but feel a kinship to them, Syl."
"They conquered the city. They're void bringers."
"No, they're people. And they're angry. With good reason." A gust of wind blew across him, making him drift to the side. "I know that feeling. It burns in you, worms inside your brain until you forget everything but the injustice done to you. It's how I felt about Elokar. Sometimes a world of rational explanations can become meaningless in the face of that all-consuming desire to get what you deserve."
"You changed your mind about Elokar, Kaladin. You saw what was right."
"Did I? Did I find what was right? Or did I just finally agree to see things the way you wanted?"
"Killing Elokar was wrong."
"And the Parshmen on the Shattered Plains that I killed, murdering them wasn't wrong?"
"You were protecting Dalinar."
"Who was assaulting their homeland."
"Because they killed his brother."
"Which, for all we know, they did because they saw how King Gavilar and his people treated the Parshmen."
Kaladin turned toward Syl, who sat on his shoulder, one leg tucked beneath her.
"So what's the difference, Syl? What is the difference between Dalinar attacking the Parshmen and these Parshmen conquering that city?"
"I don't know,"
she said softly. "And why was it worse for me to let Elokar be killed for his injustices than it was for me to actively kill Parshmen on the Shattered Plains?"
"One is wrong. I mean, it just feels wrong. Both do, I guess.
Except one nearly broke my bond, while the other didn't. The bond isn't about what's right and wrong, is it, Syl? It's about what you see as right and wrong."
"What we see," she corrected. "And about oaths. You swore to protect Elokar. Tell me that during your time planning to betray Elokar, you didn't, deep down, think you were doing something wrong."
"Fine. But it's still about perception."
Kaladin let the winds blow him, feeling a pit open in his belly.
"Storms. I'd hoped you could tell me. Give me an absolute right. For once, I'd like my moral code not to come with a list of exceptions at the end."
She nodded thoughtfully.
"I'd have expected you to object," Kaladin said. "You're a, what, embodiment of human perceptions of honor? Shouldn't you at least think you have all the answers?"
"Probably," she said. "Or maybe if there are answers, I should be the one who wants to find them."
The storm wall was now fully visible, the great wall of water and refuse, pushed by the oncoming winds of a high storm. Kaladin had drifted along with the winds away from the city, so he lashed himself eastward until they floated over the hills that made up the city's windbreak. Here, he spotted something he hadn't seen earlier. Pens full of great masses of humans. The winds blowing in from the east were growing stronger. However, the Parshmen guarding the pens were just standing there, as if nobody had given them orders to move. The first rumblings of the high storm had been distant, easy to miss. They'd notice it soon, but that might be too late.
"Oh," Syl said. "Kaladin, those people."
Kaladin cursed, then dropped the lashing holding him upward, which made him fall in a rush. He crashed to the ground, sending out a puff of glowing stormlight that expanded from him in a ring.
"High storm!" he shouted at the Parshmen guards. "High storm coming! Get these people to safety!"
They looked at him, dumbfounded. Not a surprising reaction. Kaladin summoned his blade, shoving past the Parshmen and leaping up onto the pen's low stone wall for keeping hogs. He held aloft the Syl blade. Townspeople swarmed to the wall. Cries of Shardbearer rose.
"A high storm is coming!"
he shouted, but his voice was quickly lost in the tumult of voices.
Storms. He had little doubt that the Voidbringers could handle a group of rioting townsfolk. He sucked in more stormlight, raising himself into the air. That quieted them, even drove them backward.
"Where did you shelter?" he demanded in a loud voice. "When the last storms came?"
A few people near the front pointed at the large bunkers nearby, for housing livestock, parshmen, and even travelers during storms. Could those hold an entire town's worth of people? Maybe, if they crowded in.
"Get moving," Kaladin said. "A storm will be here soon."
"Kaladin," Syl's voice said in his mind. "Behind you."
He turned and found parshmen guards approaching his wall with spears. Kaladin hopped down as the townspeople finally reacted, climbing the walls, which were barely chest-high and slathered with smooth, hardened creme. Kaladin took one step toward the parshmen, then swiped his blade, separating their spearheads from the hafts. The parshmen, who had barely more training than the ones he'd traveled with, stepped back in confusion.
"Do you want to fight me?"
Kaladin asked them. One shook her head.
"Then see that those people don't trample each other in their haste to get to safety," Kaladin said, pointing. "And keep the rest of the guards from attacking them. This isn't a revolt. Can't you hear the thunder and feel the wind picking up?"
He launched himself onto the wall again, then waved for the people to move, shouting orders. The parchment guards eventually decided that instead of fighting a shardbearer, they'd risk getting into trouble for doing what he said. Before too long, he had an entire team of them prodding the humans, often less gently than he'd have liked, toward the storm bunkers. Kaladin dropped down beside one of the guards, a female whose spear he'd sliced in half.
"How did this work the last time the storm hit?"
"We mostly left the humans to themselves," she admitted. "We were too busy running for safety."
So the Voidbringers hadn't anticipated that storm's arrival either. Kaladin winced, trying not to dwell on how many people had likely been lost to the impact of the storm wall.
"Do better," he said to her. "These people are your charge now. You've seized the city, taken what you want. If you wish to claim any kind of moral superiority, treat your captives better than they did you."
"Look,"
the Parsh woman said.
"Who are you? And why—"
Something large crashed into Kaladin, tossing him backward into the wall with a crunch. The thing had arms. A person who grasped for his throat, trying to strangle him. He kicked them off. Their eyes trailed red. A blackish-violet glow, like dark stormlight, rose from the red-eyed parchman. Kaladin cursed and lashed himself into the air. The creature followed. Another rose nearby, leaving a faint violet glow behind, flying as easily as he did. These two looked different from the one he'd seen earlier, leaner, with longer hair. Syl cried out in his mind, a sound like pain and surprise mixed. He could only assume that someone had run to fetch these after he had taken to the sky. A few wind sprens zipped past Kaladin, then began to dance playfully around him. The sky grew dark, the storm wall thundering across the land. Those red-eyed Parshendi chased him upward, so Kaladin lashed himself straight toward the storm. It had worked against the assassin in white. The high storm was dangerous, but it was also something of an ally. The two creatures followed, though they overshot his elevation and had to lash themselves back downward in a weird bobbing motion. That reminded him of his first experimentation with his powers. Kaladin braced himself, holding to the Syl blade, joined by four or five windspren, and crashed through the storm wall. An unstable darkness swallowed him, a darkness that was often split by lightning and broken by phantom glows. Winds contorted and clashed like rival armies, so irregular that Kaladin was tossed by them one way, then the other. It took all his skill in lashing to simply get going in the right direction. He watched over his shoulder as the two red-eyed parshmen burst in. Their strange glow was more subdued than his own and somehow gave off the impression of an anti-glow, a darkness that clung to them. They were immediately disrupted, sent spinning in the wind. Kaladin smiled, then was nearly crushed by a boulder tumbling through the air. Sheer luck saved him. The boulder passed close enough that another few inches would have ripped off his arm. Kaladin lashed himself upward, soaring through the tempest toward its ceiling.
"Stormfather!" he yelled. "Spren of storms!"
No response.
"Turn yourself aside!" Kaladin shouted into the churning winds. "There are people below! Stormfather! You must listen to me!"
All grew still. Kaladin stood in that strange space where he'd seen the Stormfather before, a place that seemed outside of reality. The ground was far beneath him, dim, slicked with rain, but barren and empty. Kaladin hovered in the air, not lashed. The air was simply solid beneath him.
"Who are you to make demands of the storm, son of honor?"
The Stormfather was a face as wide as the sky, dominating like a sunrise. Kaladin held his sword aloft.
"I know you for what you are, Stormfather. A Spren, like Syl."
"I am the memory of a god, the fragment that remains, the soul of a storm and the mind of eternity."
"Then surely with that soul, mind, and memory," Kaladin said, "you can find mercy for the people below."
"And what of the hundreds of thousands who have died in these winds before? Should I have had mercy for them?"
"Yes."
"And the waves that swallow, the fires that consume, you would have them stop?"
"I speak only of you, and only today. Please."
Thunder rumbled, and the Stormfather actually seemed to consider the request.
"It is not something I can do, son of Tanavast. If the wind stops blowing, it is not a wind. It is nothing."
"But..."
Kaladin dropped back into the tempest proper, and it seemed as if no time had passed. He ducked through the winds, gritting his teeth in frustration. Wind Spren accompanied him. He had 24 now, a spinning and laughing group, each a ribbon of light. He passed one of the glowing-eyed Parshmen. The Fused? Did that term refer to all whose eyes glowed?
"The Stormfather really could be more helpful, Syl. Didn't he claim to be your father?"
"It's complicated," she said in his mind. "He's stubborn, though. I'm sorry."
"He's callous," Kaladin said.
"He's a storm, Kaladin, as people over millennia have imagined him."
"He could choose."
"Perhaps, perhaps not. I think what you're doing is like asking fire to please stop being so hot."
Kaladin zoomed down along the ground, quickly reaching the hills around Revelar. He had hoped to find that everyone was safe, but that was, of course, a frail hope. People were scattered across the pens and the ground near the bunkers. One of those bunkers still had the doors open, and a few men were trying, bless them, to gather the last people outside and carry them in. Many were too far away. They huddled against the ground, holding to the wall or outcroppings of rock. Kaladin could barely make them out in the flashes of lightning, terrified lumps alone in the tempest. He had felt those winds. He'd been powerless before them, tied to the side of a building.
"Kaladin,"
Syl said in his mind as he dropped. The storm pulsed inside him. Within the high storm, his stormlight constantly renewed. It preserved him, had saved his life 12 times over. That very power that had tried to kill him had been his salvation. He hit the ground and dropped Syl, then seized the form of a young father clutching a son. He pulled them up, holding them secure, trying to run them toward the building. Nearby, another person, he couldn't see much of them, was torn away in a gust of wind and taken by the darkness.
"Kaladin, you can't save them all!"
He screamed as he grabbed another person, holding her tight and walking with them. They stumbled in the wind as they reached a cluster of people huddled together, some 24 or more in the shadow of the wall around the pens. Kaladin pulled the three he was helping, the father, the child, the woman, over to the others.
"You can't stay out here!" he shouted at them all. "Together! You have to walk together! This way!"
With effort, winds howling, rain pelting like daggers, he got the group moving across the stony ground arm in arm. They made good progress until a boulder crunched to the ground nearby, sending some of them huddling down in a panic. The wind rose, lifting some people up. Only the clutching hands of the others kept them from blowing away. Kaladin blinked away tears that mingled with the rain. He bellowed. Nearby, a flash of light illuminated a man being crushed as a portion of wall ripped away and towed his body off into the storm.
"Kaladin," Syl said, "I'm sorry."
"Being sorry isn't enough," he yelled.
He clung with one arm to a child, his face toward the storm and its terrible winds. Why did it destroy? This tempest shaped them. Must it ruin them, too? Consumed by his pain and feelings of betrayal, Kaladin surged with stormlight and flung his hand forward as if to try to push back the wind itself. 100 wind sprens spun in as lines of light, twisting around his arm, wrapping it like ribbons. They surged with light, then exploded outward in a blinding sheet, sweeping to Kaladin's sides and parting the winds around him. Kaladin stood with his hand toward the tempest and deflected it. Like a stone in a swift-moving river stopped the waters, he opened a pocket in the storm, creating a calm wake behind him. The storm raged against him, but he held the point in a formation of windspren that spread from him like wings, diverting the storm. He managed to turn his head as the storm battered him. People huddled behind him, soaked, confused, surrounded by calm.
"Go!" he shouted. "Go!"
They found their feet, the young father taking his son back from Kaladin's leeward arm. Kaladin backed up with them, maintaining the windbreak. This group was only some of those trapped by the winds, yet it took everything Kaladin had to hold the tempest. The winds seemed angry at him for his defiance. All it would take was one boulder. A figure with glowing red eyes landed on the field before him. It advanced, but the people had finally reached the bunker. Kaladin sighed and released the winds, and the spren behind him scattered. Exhausted, he let the storm pick him up and fling him away. A quick lashing gave him elevation, preventing him from being rammed into the buildings of the city.
"Wow," Syl said in his mind. "What did you just do? With the storm?"
"Not enough," Kaladin whispered.
"You'll never be able to do enough to satisfy yourself, Kaladin. That was still wonderful."
He was past Revelar in a heartbeat. He turned, becoming merely another piece of debris on the winds. The fused gave chase, but lagged behind, then vanished. Kaladin and Syl pushed out of the storm wall, then rode it at the front of the storm. They passed over cities, plains, mountains, never running out of stormlight, for there was a source renewing them from behind. They flew for a good hour like that before a current in the winds nudged him toward the south.
"Go that way,"
Syl said, a ribbon of light.
"Why?"
"Just listen to the piece of nature incarnate, okay? I think Father wants to apologize in his own way."
Kaladin growled, but allowed the winds to channel him in a specific direction. He flew this way for hours, lost in the sounds of the tempest, until finally he settled down, half of his own volition, half because of the pressing winds. The storm passed, leaving him in the middle of a large, open field of rock. The plateau in front of the tower city of Urethiru.
32. Company. For I, of all people, have changed. From Oathbringer, Preface. Shallan settled in Sabariel's sitting room. It was a strangely shaped stone chamber with a loft above. He sometimes put musicians there, and a shallow cavity in the floor, which he kept saying he was going to fill with water and fish. She was fairly certain he made claims like that just to annoy Dalinar with his supposed extravagance. For now, they'd covered the hole with some boards, and Sabariel would periodically warn people not to step on them. The rest of the room was decorated lavishly. She was pretty sure she'd seen those tapestries in a monastery in Dalinar's war camp, and they were matched by luxurious furniture, golden lamps, and ceramics, and a bunch of splintery boards covering a pit. She shook her head. Then, curled up on a sofa with blankets heaped over her, she gladly accepted a cup of steaming citrus tea from Polona. She still hadn't been able to rid herself of the lingering chill she'd felt
since her encounter with Ray Shafir a few hours back.
"Is there anything else I can get you?"
Pallona asked. Shallan shook her head, so the Herdazian woman settled herself on a sofa nearby, holding another cup of tea. Shallan sipped, glad for the company. Adolin had wanted her to sleep, but the last thing she wanted was to be alone. He'd handed her over to Pallona's care, then stayed with Dalinar and Navani to answer their further questions.
"So," Pallona said, "what was it like?"
How to answer that? She'd touched the storming Midnight Mother, a name from ancient lore, one of the unmade, princes of the Voidbringers. People sang about Rey Shafir in poetry and epics, describing her as a dark, beautiful figure. Paintings depicted her as a black-clad woman with red eyes and a sultry gaze. That seemed to exemplify how little they really remembered about these things.
"It wasn't like the stories," Shallan whispered. "Rey Shafir is a spren. A vast, terrible spren who wants so desperately to understand us. So she kills us, imitating our violence."
There was a deeper mystery beyond that, a wisp of something she'd glimpsed while intertwined with Rey Shafir. It made Shallan wonder if this spren wasn't merely trying to understand humankind, but rather searching for something it itself had lost. Had this creature, in distant, distant time beyond memory, once been human? They didn't know. They didn't know anything. At Shallan's first report, Navani had set her scholars searching for information, but their access to books here was still limited. Even with access to the Palinaeum, Shallan wasn't optimistic. Yasna had hunted for years to find Urithiru, and even then most of what she'd discovered had been unreliable. It had simply been too many years. "To think it was here all this time," Pallona said, "hiding down there."
"She was captive," Shallan whispered.
"She eventually escaped, but that was centuries ago. She has been waiting here ever since."
"Well, we should find where the others are held and make sure they don't get out."
"I don't know if the others were ever captured." She'd felt isolation and loneliness from Ray Shafir, a sense of being torn away while the others escaped.
"So they're out there, and always have been," Shallan said.
She felt exhausted, and her eyes were drooping in direct defiance of her insistence to Adolin that she was not that kind of tired.
"Surely we'd have discovered them by now."
"I don't know," Shallan said. They'll just be normal to us, the way things have always been." She yawned, then nodded absently as Pallona continued talking, her comments degenerating into praise of Shallan for acting as she had. Adolin had been the same way, which she hadn't minded, and Dalinar had been downright nice to her, instead of being his usual stern rock of a human being. She didn't tell them how near she'd come to breaking, and how terrified she was that she might someday meet that creature again. But maybe she did deserve some acclaim. She'd been a child when she'd left her home, seeking salvation for her family. For the first time since that day on the ship, watching Yakaved fade behind her, she felt like she actually might have a handle on all of this, like she might have found some stability in her life, some control over herself and her surroundings. Remarkably, she kind of felt like an adult. She smiled and snuggled into her blankets, drinking her tea and, for the moment, putting out of her mind that basically an entire troop of soldiers had seen her with her glove off. She was kind of an adult. She could deal with a little embarrassment. In fact, she was increasingly certain that between Shallan, Vale, and Radiant, she could deal with anything life could throw at her. A disturbance outside made her sit up, though it didn't sound dangerous. Some chatter, a few boisterous exclamations. She wasn't terribly surprised when Adolin stepped in, bowed to Pallona. He did have nice manners, and jogged over to her, his uniform still rumpled from having worn shard plate over it.
"Don't panic,"
he said. It's a good thing.
It? She said, growing alarmed.
Well, someone just arrived at the tower.
Oh, that. Sabariel passed the news. The bridge boy's back.
Him? No, that's not what I'm talking about.
Adolin searched for words as voices approached, and several other people stepped into the room. At their head was Yasna Kolin. The end of part one.
Interludes. Puli, Elista, Venli. Interlude 1. Puli. Puli, the lighthouse keeper, tried not to let everyone know how excited he was for this new storm. It was truly tragic. Truly tragic. He told Sokken this as she wept. She had thought herself quite high and blessed when she'd landed her new husband. She'd moved into the man's fine stone hut in a prime spot for growing a garden behind the northern cliffs of the town. Puli gathered scraps of wood blown eastward by the strange storm and piled them in his little cart. He pulled it with two hands, leaving Sokken to weep for her husband. Up to three now, she was, all lost at sea. Truly tragic. Still, he was excited for the storm. He pulled his cart past other broken homes here, where they should have been sheltered west of the cliffs. Puli's grandfather had been able to remember when those cliffs hadn't been there. Kalek himself had broken apart the land in the middle of a storm, making a new prime spot for homes. Where would the rich people put their houses now? And they did have rich people here in town, never mind what the travelers on the ocean said. Those would stop at this little port on the crumbling eastern edge of Roshar and shelter from storms in their cove alongside the cliffs. Puli pulled his cart past the cove. Here, one of the foreigner captains, with long eyebrows and tan skin, rather than the proper blue skin, was trying to make sense of her ruined ship. It had been rocked in the cove, struck by lightning, then smashed back against the stones. Now only the mast was visible. Truly tragic, Puli said. He complimented the captain on the mast, though. It was a very nice mast. Puli picked up a few planks from the broken ship that had washed onto the shore of the cove, then threw them into his cart. Even if it had destroyed many a ship, Puli was happy for this new storm. Secretly happy. Had the time finally come that his grandfather had warned of? The time of changes? When the men from the hidden island of the origin at last came to reclaim Natanatan? Even if not, this new storm brought him so much wood. Scraps of rock buds, branches from trees. He gathered it all eagerly, piling his cart high, then pulled it past fissures and huddles, trying to decide how they'd survive in a world with storms from both directions. Fishers didn't sleep away the weeping like lazy farmers. They worked it, for there were no winds. Lots of bailing, but no winds. Until now. A tragedy, he told Aulam, while helping him clear the refuse of his barn. Many of the boards ended up in Puli's cart. A tragedy, he agreed with Himadak as he watched her children so she could run a broth to her sister, who was sick with the fever. A tragedy, he told the drummer brothers, as he helped them pull a tattered sail from the surf and stretch it out on the rocks. At last Puli finished his rounds and pulled his little cart up the long, twisting road toward Defiance. That was his name for the lighthouse. Nobody else called it that, because to them it was just the lighthouse. At the top he left out an offering of fruit for Kalek, the herald who lived in the storm. Then he pulled his wagon into the room on the bottom floor. Defiance wasn't a tall lighthouse. He'd seen paintings of the sleek, fashionable ones down along Longbrow's Straits. Lighthouses for rich folks who sailed ships that didn't catch fish. Defiance was only 2 stories tall and built squat, like a bunker. But she had good stonework, and a buffer of creme on the outside kept her from leaking. She'd stood for over 100 years, and Kalek hadn't decided to knock her down. The Stormfather knew how important she was. Pooley carried a load of wet stormwood and broken boards up to the top of the lighthouse, where he set them out beside the fire, which burned low during the day, to dry. He dusted off his hands, then stepped up to the rim of the lighthouse. At night, the mirrors would shine the light right out through this hole. He looked over the cliffs to the east. His family was a lot like the lighthouse themselves, squat, short, but powerful. And enduring.
"They'll come with light in their pockets," Grandfather had said. "They'll come to destroy. But you should watch for them anyway, because they'll come from the origin. The sailors lost on an infinite sea. You keep that fire high at night, Pooley. You burn it bright until the day they come. They'll arrive when the night is darkest."
Surely that was now, with a new storm. Darkest nights, a tragedy, and a sign.
Interlude 2. Elista. The Yokasha Monastery was ordinarily a very quiet place. Nestled in the forests on the western slopes of the Horneater Peaks, the monastery felt only rain at the passing of a high storm. Furious rain, yes, but none of the terrible violence known in most parts of the world. Elista reminded herself every passing storm how lucky she was. Some Ardents had fought half their lives to be transferred to Yokasha. Away from politics, storms, and other annoyances, at Yokasha you could simply think. Usually. "Are you looking at these numbers? Are your eyes disconnected from your brain? We can't judge yet. 3 instances are not enough. 2 data points to make a coincidence, 3 to make a sequence. The Everstorm travels at a consistent speed, unlike the High Storm. You can't possibly say that. One of your data points, so highly touted, is from the original passing of the storm, which happened as an uncommon event." Elista slammed her book closed and stuffed it into her satchel. She burst from her reading nook and gave a glare to the 2 Ardents arguing in the hall outside, both wearing the caps of master scholars. They were so involved in their shouting match that they didn't even respond to the glare, though it had been one of her best. She bustled from the library, entering a long hallway with sides open to the elements. Peaceful trees, a quiet brook, humid air and mossy vines that popped and stretched as they lay out for the evening. Well, yes, a large swath of trees out there had been flattened by the new storm, but that was no reason for everyone to get upset. The rest of the world could worry. Here, at the central home of the Devotary of the Mind, she was supposed to be able to just read. She set her things out at a reading desk near an open window. The humidity wasn't good for books, but weak storms went hand in hand with fecundity. You simply had to accept that. Hopefully those new fabrials to draw water from the air would... "Telling you, we're going to have to move!" A new voice echoed through the hallway. "Look, the storm is going to ravage those woods. Before long, this slope will be barren, and the storm will be hitting us full force." "The new storm doesn't have that strong a wind factor, Betam. It's not going to blow down the trees. Have you looked at my measurements?"
"I've disputed those measurements."
"But..." Elista rubbed her temples. She wore her head shaved, like the other Ardents. Her parents still joked that she'd joined the Ardentia simply because she hated bothering with her hair. She tried earplugs but could hear the arguing through them, so she packed up her things again. Maybe the low building? She took the long set of steps outside, traveling down the slope along a forested path.
Before arriving at the monastery for the first time, she'd had illusions about what it would be like to live among scholars. No bickering, no politicking. She hadn't found that to be true, but generally people left her alone. And so she was lucky to be here. She told herself that again as she entered the lower building. It was basically a zoo. Dozens of people gathering information from span reeds, talking to one another, buzzing with talk of this or that high prince or king. She stopped in the doorway, took it all in for a moment, then turned on her heel and stalked back out. Now what? She started back up the steps, but slowed. It's probably the only route to peace, she thought, looking out into the forest. Trying not to think about the dirt, the Kremlings, and the fact that something might drip on her head, she strode off into the forest. She didn't want to go too far, as who knew what might be out here? She chose a stump without too much moss on it, and settled down among bobbing lifespren, book across her lap. She could still hear Ardens arguing, but they were distant. She opened her book, intent on finally getting something done today. Weema spun away from Brightlord Sterling's forward advances, tucking her safe hand to her breast and lowering her gaze from his comely locks. Such affection as to excite the unsavory mind could surely not satisfy her for an extended period, as though his attentions had at one time been fanciful delights to entertain her leisure hours. They now seemed to manifest his utmost impudence and greatest faults of character. What? Elista exclaimed, reading. No, you silly girl. He's finally pronounced his affection for you. Don't you dare turn away now. How could she accept this wanton justification of her once single-minded desires? Should she not, instead, select the more prudent choice, as advocated by the undeviating will of her uncle? Bright Lord Vadam had an endowment of land upon the High Prince's grace, and would have means to provide far beyond the satisfactions available to a simple officer, no matter how well regarded, or what winds had graced his temperaments, features, and gentle touch.